You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
During a recent bout with the influenza, when the blood is feverish and all kinds of unexpected things rise to the surface of the brain, was it all the things you are that haunted me? It was not. Was it the man I love? No, it wasn't Stardust and it wasn't Dancing in the Dark. It was this, and I have no explanation.
Never in all my days have I found a pair of arms so ideal. What is that well-known phrase that describes the way your arms make me feel? Well, snug as a bug in a rug, whenever you hold me tight, cozy and warm on the chilliest night. Snug as a bug in a rug, the moment I feel your kiss. Talk about home, home was never like this. Goes on a roller coaster. Then I get that feeling like a little piece of toast in a toaster. Gee, but my life would be cold without your delicious hug, keeping me snug as a bug in a, keeping me snug as a bug in a, keeping me snug as a bug in a.
Now, snug as a bug in a rug is never going to stop any traffic and it's never going to win any prizes, even though Blossom Dearie sings it so well there. But there's something insidious about this rhythmic life, something very engaging about the way it rolls along, which suggests that it may not be quite so simple-minded as it sounds. No, it isn't. Frank Lesser wrote the words, and the fact that the music came from an ex-jazz musician called Matty Malnick has much to do with the rhythmic life that I was talking about. The song originally came from a 1939 B picture called The Gracie Allen Murder Case, and guess who sang it in the picture? Probably it didn't come out so well on screen as it does on record, but I think the song is certainly good enough not to be completely obliterated. Now, during the year, I acquired a few albums which no acquirer should be without, and although this next performance dates back to 1983, it was early this year that I first laid trembling hands on it. Now, here is one of those outstanding songs which runs a danger of dropping out simply because of the shortage of quality singers who, A, have the sense to know it's worth singing, and B, are capable of singing it. Well, that's where Rosemary Clooney is doing such sterling work, fighting a brave rearguard action on behalf of quality in a popular song. In her album, devoted to the music of Howard Arlen, she took good care to include the song that Arlen wrote with Johnny Mercer for Fred Astaire, and which always ran after that in the shadow of the film's big song, One for My Baby.
This will be my shining hour, calm and happy and bright. In my dreams, your face will flower through the darkness of the night. Like the lights of home before me, or an angel watching o'er me. This will be my shining hour till I'm with you again. Thank you. calm and happy and bright. In my dreams, your face will flower through the darkness of the night. Like the lights of home before me, or an angel watching o'er me, this will be my shining hour till I'm with you again.
My Shining Hour, which, according to my typing, was sung there by Rosemary Looney. The saxophone solo was by Scott Hamilton, guitar by Ed Bicker. Now, when that album first came through, I was delighted that Miss Clooney had elected to do it with a small jazz group. But even as I say that, I have a wistful recollection of the kind of work she's done also with big studio orchestras. Now, I really have no reason for including this next performance in a review of 1984, except that during that year, I've sat and listened to it more times than I care to remember. The song really belongs in a review of 1910, which is when it was written, and which incidentally makes it one of the oldest of all standard items. Written by a black vaudeville artist called Shelton Brooks, it's also one of the first songs to raise the flag, because Brooks was born in Ontario, Canada, in 1886, and must have been one of the very first Canadians ever to achieve anything in the arts on a world scale, apart, of course, from the great Stephen Leacock. A magnificently constructed song here, wittily paraphrased by the Nelson Riddle Orchestra.
Some of these days you'll miss me, honey. Some of these days you'll feel so lonely. You'll miss my hugging, you'll miss my kissing. You'll miss me, honey, when you go away. I feel so lonely just for you only. 'Cause you know, honey, you've had your way. And when you leave me, I know 'twill grieve me. You'll miss your little baby. Yes, some of these days. Just for you only. For you know, honey, you've had your way. And when you leave me, I know 'twill grieve me. You'll miss your little baby. Yes, some of these days.
My typewriter really is in a vagrant mood this week. It insists that the singer there was somebody called Rosie Gloomy. Well, anything but gloom is evoked by that kind of performance. When I spoke before of a year of revival albums, I had especially in mind Frank Sinatra, whose classic albums suddenly started reappearing in the spring. Among the dozens of tracks made reavailable was one that I'd been hunting for a long time in a casual sort of way. Back in 1950, playing at the Tottenham Municipal Hall with a band which had better remain nameless, I was delighted one Saturday night to be playing this song and wondered who'd written it and for what. Well, it dates back to 1922, when a singer called Aileen Stanley had some success with it, and it kind of hung around after that. It's fascinating that Sinatra should have made a point of reviving it. The writers were Chester Conn and a man called Ned Miller, and here we can raise the flag for a second time. Miller was a Londoner, born here in 1899, but only just because by 1900 he'd emigrated to America, very considerately taking his mother and father with him. I think what attracts me to the song is that dapper little key change in the 12th bar.
I don't know why I should cry over you, sigh over you, even be blue. I should have known that you'd leave me alone and break my heart in two. Although you have left me alone to pine, and all of my love was a waste of time, someday your heart will be broken like mine. So why should I cry over you? Of time, someday your heart will be broken like mine. So why should I cry over you? You broke my heart, you took it apart. So pack up your baggage and beat it. Why should I cry over you?
Why Should I Cry Over You, Frank Sinatra, one of many excellent tracks which came home to roost in 1984. Now, what were the performances most frequently mentioned in listeners' letters? Well, I think there were three, and if I never played them anything like as frequently as requested, that's only because I would have ended up doing them every week, literally every week. Never a postbag went by without desperate listeners imploring for another snatch of this.
I won't send roses or hold the door. I won't remember which dress you wore. My heart is too much in control. The lack of romance in my soul will turn you gray, kid. So stay away, kid. Forget my shoulder when you're in need. Forgetting birthdays is guaranteed. And should I love you, you would be the last to know. I won't send roses and roses suit you so. My pace is frantic, my temper's cross, with words romantic, I'm at a loss. I'd be the first one to agree that I'm preoccupied with me, and it's inbred, kid. So keep your head, kid. In me you'll find things like guts and nerve, but not the kind things that you deserve. And so while there's a fighting chance, just turn and go. I won't send roses and roses suit you. So
Robert Preston as Mack Sennett in Mack and Mabel, and perhaps I should make it clear that it wasn't that track in particular which people kept asking for, but really just anything from Mack and Mabel. They didn't seem to care what it was, so overwhelming is that whole score. One of the oddest things about presenting a programme of this kind every week, and one of the most pleasurable too, is the way that a song can sometimes sneak under your guard and become part of you. When I opened before with Snug as a Bug in a Rug, that's what I meant. And the same thing has happened with me with another song, which I first saw and heard being performed when I was, I think, 7 years old. I then forgot all about it till I came across it while doing this programme. But clearly I couldn't have forgotten about it entirely, because the moment I rediscovered it, I knew how it went, and what is much more important, I was instantly transported back to the Sixpennies at my local, sitting there in the dark as part of a juvenile congregation, reacting as one man to the antics of the hero. And that is one of the great potencies about popular music, that long after the textures of the objects and the people from a long-lost past episode have vanished, the music remains fresh as ever, the deadliest agent of nostalgia we know. To get caught off guard by a song can sometimes be too much. After all, without that, there wouldn't have been any plot at all to a movie like Casablanca. Well, we all have our as time goes by for the various stages of our lives. And this next song for me is Childhood.
There is a ship that sails the sea for little folks like you and me. It carries all our dreams, our little hopes and schemes. I have a ship that sailed away. It's coming back someday. We'll have that cottage you've been waiting for. We'll have those roses rambling round the door. And maybe baby playing on the floor. When my ship comes in, the most expensive evening gown. You'll have the finest dinner coat in town. The finest families won't turn us down when my ship comes in. That fur coat I've been craving is practically so. Have it painted every year or two. And best of all, I know that I'll have you when my ship comes in.
The words of Mr. Grace LeBoy, Gus Kahn, and the music of that most remarkable partner of his, the great Walter Donaldson. Nostalgia is everything there. The standards of judgment I bring to that song are the same ones I applied all those years ago when I first saw Kid Millions. But this next example is different, because I first heard this song only 2 or 3 years ago, and I brought to it adult professional standards of judgment. The only sad thing about this wonderful moment is that in the world of 1984, nobody has any time for it. The song remains unknown, unsung, even though if this were the 20s or the 30s, all the best standard singers would be doing their best by it. And it's because the performance is informal that it's more moving than ever. When a songwriter first completes a song, the most delicious moment for him, apart from getting paid, is when he puts it all together for the first time. And so here we have the composer at the piano, the lyricist at the microphone, and the unveiling of their latest model. A moment so pregnant with possibilities. Will it turn out to be another Stardust? Or is it fated to be forgotten? Well, this one was fated to be forgotten. Except by us.
Lady Luck, it's goodbye. Hate to see you go. Fireworks filled the sky. It was quite a show. I just want to thank you for the free ride. Out of all the others, it was the ride. Whatever happens from here on in, I'm way ahead of the game. Whatever comes up, it's heads I win. Your kiss was my claim to fame. I rolled a 7 and locked up the star. Walked into heaven right through the front door. Whatever happens from here on out, I won't be sorry I came. I've had the kind of adventure I read of. I'm way ahead of the game. We shared a fun kiss you'll never recall, but better one kiss than no kiss at all. If you forget me from here on out, I'll still be happy that I came. Whatever happens, it's just like I said. Yes, I'm way ahead of the game.
From the ill-fated Bert Lahr musical Foxy, which was based on Ben Jonson's Volpone. Although when I say ill-fated, I think I should add that Lahr did win the award for the best male performance in a musical. What stands out starkly looking back is the brilliance of the score, Mercer particularly, and his most inspired. And yet, in the well-known biography of Lahr, written by his son, we find disparaging words about the songs, which are only ever made by people who don't know anything about music, have no training in its technicalities, no experience of its nuances, and no humility when it comes to passing judgment. I don't think that there were 6 lyricists alive in the world who could have been capable of writing the kind of words we just heard. And yet in the Lahr biography, there are airy remarks like the score was lacking, what they needed were better songs, and so on. Well, one artist new to me since I started presenting these shows is a man whose only claim to fame originally was that he understood the works of his father much better than Bert Lahr's biographer did his. There is a kind of popular song, the best kind, that has an invisible dynamo built into it so that it seems to swing almost of its own accord. That way it's very easy for us to judge the artist who sings it because we have to decide how much he gets in the way and impedes that swinging. Those who do impede it cause musicians to have nosebleeds in mid-performance. But here's an example of a delightful song given just the right amount of heat by the performer.
When you're far away from New York town, you're nowhere at all. You may roam through the whole USA. Will you see any sights like the lights of Broadway? They're friends
make you feel as though the big town is really small. When you're far away from New York town, you're nowhere at all. When you're far away from New York town, you're nowhere at all. You may roam through the whole USA. Will you see any sights like the lights of Broadway?
Schwartz, son of Arthur, singing one of the songs written by his father in partnership with Howard Dietz. The trumpeter there was Bernie Privin. Now, it really would be improper of me, I think, to wind up the year without making any reference at all to the series of recordings on which I've always drawn so heavily, the Ella Fitzgerald songbooks. And from those hundreds of unforgettable performances which make up that unique series, I've selected almost at random, I think, the title song of a 1920s musical where the orchestration, the singing, the tempo, the feeling are all so perfect that you wonder if the actual stage version was half as good.
When you tell me that I'm not so pretty, dear, help my looking glass and I agree. In the contest at Atlantic City, dear, Miss America, I'd never be. Truth to tell, though you're not such a lot yourself, as a Cary Grant, you're not so hot yourself.
Ella Fitzgerald, accompanied by Nelson Riddle with Funny Face, words and music by the Gershwins. When he was a beginner, just setting out as a lyric writer, Ira Gershwin trafficked under the nom de piano of Arthur Francis. Eventually, Ira ditched the name for two reasons. First, because his original motive in adopting it, which I'll come to in a moment, had vanished. And second, because he just happened to pick a pen name that already belonged to somebody else. Now, this name he chose, Arthur Francis, comes up in a letter to me from Mr. Alan Schwartz of Cardiff, who says he has an idea why Ira chose Arthur Francis. You see, there were four Gershwin children. There was George and Ira, but there were also another brother called Arthur and a sister called Francis. Does it not seem likely, writes Mr. Schwartz to me, that in calling himself Arthur Francis, Ira was using up some family names already in circulation? Absolutely correct, Mr. Schwartz. Ira says exactly this in his autobiographical writings. But Mr. Schwartz goes on to say that he can find no mention of the pseudonym Arthur Francis anywhere, and especially he can't find any trace of some other lyric writer called Arthur Francis. Well, Mr. Schwartz, maybe we can settle this once and for all in the course of the next few minutes. First of all, the reason for the pseudonym. Although Ira was the elder of the two, George was the one who made the quick start as a songwriter. Ira, 2 years older in time, was much younger in spirit. So when he started writing, he thought that rather than be accused of cashing in on his brother's rapidly growing reputation, he would adopt a new name. Before I continue with this tangled tale, how about an Arthur Francis lyric? Or rather, an Arthur Francis lyric over two. There was one song that George wrote with two collaborators. One was Buddy De Silva, the other with Arthur Francis. And incidentally, just as a demonstration of how careful you have to be when writing a song, the original version of what we're about to hear referred to a staircase, which would, of course, have spoiled the whole thing. They changed it to Stairway at the last minute, and I suppose that's what they mean when they talk about a flight of inspiration.
All you preachers who delight in panning the dancing teachers, let me tell you there are a lot of features of the dance that carry you through the gates of heaven. It's madness to be always sitting around in sadness when you could be learning the steps.
Sarah Vaughan singing the song that stood out in George White's scandals of 1922. One day, somebody will write a very funny book about Georgie White, who used to raise the money for his Broadway reviews by borrowing capital from the underworld, and who also had a way of getting tangled up off stage with the chorus girls he hired to untangle themselves on stage. White used to hang around a lot with Damon Runyon, who liked him so much that he put White into a couple of his short stories, especially the tale called A Very Honourable Guy, where we read of a young lady, quote, all she has to do is to walk around and about Georgie White's stage with only a few light bandages on, and everyone considers her very beautiful, especially from the neck down, unquote. Well, that was pure Georgie White, and he used a lot of Gershwin music in the early 1920s, partly because he liked the sound of it, but mainly because in those days he could get George cheap. But to return to the issues raised by Mr. Schwartz about the elusive Arthur Francis, Ira never knew for years who he was. He thought he was Isidore, and he used to sign his early letters to friends as Is. But it wasn't until 1928, when applying for a passport, that he discovered he wasn't Isidore at all, he was Israel. By then it didn't matter, because to everybody else he was Ira. Ira, by the way, didn't know what the name Ira meant either. Ira, when he took that name, thought it meant sweet and gentle. And what a song title that would make. Years later, Ira found out it meant watchful. The other trouble was that people started mistaking Ira for a girl, usually George's wife or sister. That's why when Ira came to publish his memoirs, it says on the cover, by Ira Gershwin, Gent. Now, before we leave Arthur Francis, I'd like to remind us all that when he was still in this embryonic state, he did write at least one lyric which I always thought was worthy of the Ira who was to come later. And I ought to make another point here. This next song reveals itself as beautiful the moment you hear it. It's the kind of song we think of as a standard, the kind of song which belongs to some kind of cultural heritage, tradition, whatever you like to say. Yet it was written in 1921, and it was 40 years, 4-0, before anybody had the sense to record it.
I've just finished writing an advertisement calling for a boy. No half-hearted Romeo or flirt is meant. That's the kind I'd not employ. Though anybody interested can apply, he must know a thing or two to qualify. For instance, he must be able to dance. He must make life a romance. I said a boy wanted one who can smile. Must know how to say yes. When I look at a new dress, oh, I'll be ready when the right one calls, and I'll start vamping him until if he proves to be the right little laddie, I'll make him glad he answered my ad. He must like musical shows, and he must wear snappy clothes. Yes, that is my story, and to it I'll stick. No glory in having a hick. He needn't be such a saint, but oh, he's a scholar. When I see him, I'll holler, my lad, I'm glad you answered
I don't care if his bank account totals naught. We can live on love and food for thought. It's pure Ira Gershwin. Boy Wanted There, sung by Ella Fitzgerald, came originally from a 1921 show called A Dangerous Maid. The Broadway run was naught performances because it closed in Pittsburgh. Interestingly enough, 3 years later, the song was removed and slipped into a Gershwin London production called Primrose, with additional lyrics by the local writer Desmond Carter. Now, some months ago, I said that Carter was credited with half the lyrics of that song we just heard. Well, I've since discovered that he wrote the anglicised version, but that what we just heard was all Ira's. No, correction, all Arthur Francis's. Ira says that in 1924, he finally abandoned the silly subterfuge of Arthur Francis because the secret had long been out. And anyway, he had since discovered that there was an English lyricist called Arthur Francis. Well, I've managed to find no trace of any English Arthur Francis, but if Ira says there was one, then there was one. Even if it would turn out that this English Arthur Francis worked under the nom de plume of Ira Gershwin. Couple of postscripts to all this. First, I should like to mark the occasion by playing one tune which has a special place in the Gershwin canon. I've played the last of Arthur Francis, so here is the last of Ira Gershwin working with Brother George. This was the one that George was writing when he died.
It's very clear, my love is here to stay. Not for all year, but ever and a day. Oh, the radio and the telephone movies that we know may just be passing fancies, and then time may go, but oh, my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we going on a long, long way. In time, the rockets may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they only made of clay. But our love is here to stay.
Take it out. It's very clear, our love is here to stay. Not for a year, but ever and a day. Just be passing fancies, and in time may go. But no, oh, my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we're going along. May tumble, they're only made of clay, but our love is here to stay.
Forever and a day,
I
So that was the tragic end of George Gershwin, but not, of course, of Ira, who went on to write so many distinguished things with so many distinguished men. One day, this writer dies, and the estate passes into the hands of relations and descendants who, it seems to me anyway, handled their responsibilities with a maladroitness amounting to something less than genius. I won't go into all the things that the administrators of the estate did, how they drove biographers into the law courts, how they tried to get this banned and that cancelled, how they adopted an attitude towards the works of the master, which would have seemed excessive if it was Shakespeare we were talking about. As it happened, Shakespeare's had to take his chances in the open market, but not this writer I'm talking about. One day, another artist sang a vocal version of one of this writer's works, and the estate instantly jumped up, trod on it, and prevented its release in Great Britain. On what grounds, I do not know. And that's why this next recording has never been officially released in Great Britain, and why I get the feeling as I play it that I'm performing some kind of a service for listeners. For instance, only the other night at dinner, I was talking to the novelist Geoffrey Archer, and he said he'd love to hear it. So here it is for Mr. Archer and for everybody else, because if I get all the letters that have demanded this record and build them into a pile, it would be a good idea for somebody to stand on the top of that pile and then jump down onto the estate of this lyricist.
By the old Moul Main Pagoda, looking eastward to the sea, there's a Burma broad a-settin', and I know she thinks of me. For the wind is in the palm trees, and the temple bells, they say, come you back, you British soldier, come you back to Mandalay, come you back to Mandalay. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can't you hear their paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishers play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China, across the bay. Ship me somewhere east of Suez, where the best is like the worst, where there ain't no Ten Commandments and a cat can raise a thirst. 'Cause those crazy bells are calling, and it's there that I would be, by the old Moul Main Pagoda, looking lazy at the sea, looking lazy at the sea. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can't you hear their paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder.
Frank Sinatra, The Road to Mandalay, lyrics by Rudyard Kipling. And perhaps one day the controllers of the Kipling estate will admit that the old boy's words are durable enough to survive that recording without falling to pieces. I recently received a very eloquent letter indeed from Spike Milligan, who wondered why it should be that people with musical tastes like his and mine are accused sometimes of harping on the past instead of following the herd down the slippery slope into the modern hit parade. After all, says Spike in his letter, people who listen to Bach and Beethoven aren't accused of wallowing in nostalgia, so why should the likes of us? Why indeed? I suppose one of the reasons is that there's one born every minute. That includes people who dismiss this next performance simply because it's more than 5 minutes old. Therefore irrelevant.
Every day, every day, every day, I have the blues.
Joe Williams with the Basie Band singing Every Day, one of those performances which sounds as though it happened on the spur of the moment, but was really the fruit of half a lifetime's dedication to the job in hand, and a performance which will no doubt survive as long as the human animal decides not to dispense with its ears. I close today's programme with reference to the Gershwin family, a song originally written for Ginger Rogers, whose performance of it was later improved upon by more than one singer, including this one.
Old man sunshine, listen you, never tell me dreams come true. Just try it, and I'll start a riot. Beatrice Fairfax, don't you dare ever tell me he will care. I'm certain it's the final curtain. I never want to hear from any cheerful Pollyannas who tells you fate supplies a mate. It's all banana. They're writing songs of love, but not for me. Our lucky stars above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I've found more clouds of gray than any Russian play could guarantee. I was a fool to fall and to get that way. Hi-ho, alas, and also lackaday. Although I can't dismiss the memory of his kiss, I guess he never had eyes for me.
The music of the Gershwin Brothers, and that's it. See you same time next week.
I was a fool to fall and to get that way. I hope, alas, and also lackaday. The memory of his kiss, I guess, yes, he's not for me.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.